91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour begins with discussion of Nature Links for Lifelong Learning, empowering youth with intellectual disabilities. The founder, University of Miami professor Dr. Gregory Bush, tells about some special needs people, 18 to 30, who need a little support to continue education, job prospects, and social engagement abilities. That's first. Then we learn all about the annual South Beach Food and Wine Festival's Burger Bash. It's always a big and sold-out experience, for some of the country's top chefs battle to create the finest burger of all. Some go to extraordinary lengths. No belly bombers here. Topical Currents is next, after the news. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper here, minus Bonnie Berman. She has the day off. So we begin with a look at Nature Links for Lifelong Learning. It creates opportunities along many fronts for those with intellectual disabilities. With us now is Nature Links founder. He's University of Miami professor, Dr. Gregory Bush. He's also a founder of the Urban Environmental League and the director of the Institute of Public History. Good to see you again, Gregory Bush.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us the background of Nature Links, Greg Bush.
I have a daughter.
About your daughter especially.
I have a daughter who's 29. And
that's with Paula.
Paula's her name, with intellectual disabilities. And I brought her back to Miami back in 2007, and looked for a placement for her here and was not satisfied. So I started a project that's now called Project Bridge, which is the early Nature Links at Shake a Leg Miami, where students would be involved with things around boats and natural right. settings and stuff. She grew out of that. And then eventually we formed a 501c3 nonprofit organization called Nature Links, incorporated in 2013, and we've grown so that now we have three different programs. One's a Culinary Foundation program located at Coral Gables Congregational Church. A second, it's called Urban Explorers, which is in some ways is the most exciting because it's based at the Old Frost Museum. Students do all sorts of activities, from travel training and independent life skills to learning about weather and do some gardening, things like that. And then we have a conservation leadership program based at Miami Simpson Park in association with the City of Miami that's been very helpful to us. And so we are growing in a number of different ways with trying to get students out in the community, empower them to use that word, and to give them a really opportunity to show their unique skills.
So what's really the need, though? These individuals are sort of in a transitional era, and they just need a bit of help to...
No, I think it's much stronger than that, because by and large, and these others can speak more knowingly than I, once they're 22 years old, essentially they're gone from the public school system with very few exceptions, and there's very little for them to do. And they have talents, and so many of them sit home watching TV, and they can keep learning. So to me, it became a very significant civil rights issue for this overlooked population. It's like they're forgotten people once they reach 22. So we came to try to create different kinds of opportunities for them. And the students, I think, are thoroughly enjoying it. But there are lots of problems with all of this in terms of transportation issues and recruitment, because a lot of families don't know about us.
Also with us today is Michael Alessandri. He's a chairman of the Department of Psychology at the University of Miami. And he's also the director of University of Miami and Nova Southeastern's Center for Autism and Related Disabilities. Thanks for coming, Dr. Alessandri.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us more about your tie-in with... So
I'm here entirely to support the efforts of Greg to promote Nature Links for Lifelong Learning. As the executive director of the CARD Center at the University of Miami, We serve every family in South Florida who has a child with autism. And we're currently serving about 10,000 families, all at no cost to those families.
And once again, the acronym CARD.
CARD, Center for Autism and Related Disabilities. And what we're seeing is there is a growing population of young adults who are exiting the school system without meaningful opportunities. So we're very interested in promoting more post-secondary learning opportunities, some work transition to work opportunities. We're working very closely with social entrepreneurs to create business opportunities in the community. We just think everybody deserves to live a dignified life, and every young adult with a disability or without should have an opportunity to work and to contribute in a meaningful way. So I'm really grateful to be here to support Greg and his efforts.
Also with us today is a longtime workforce disability specialist and counselor, Robin Mattiso. She's also a board member of Nature Links. Welcome to you, Ms. Mattiso.
Thank you very much.
Happy and to be how here. Do you tie into Nature Links?
Well, I tie into Nature Links uniquely. I met Greg through employment, and he and I sat down and realized that we had a common goal, which was to create a place and an environment for young adults with disabilities who were aging out of the school system but were not necessarily going to participate right away in work programs and who had considerably more to offer both themselves, their families, and the community than sitting in a daycare type environment. So when Greg said he had a unique program that met that need for so many students that I had seen that needed that kind of service, we kind of joined forces, and I've been on the board ever since.
Gregory Bush, in the material you gave us before this program, it mentioned that some of these individuals wind up really kind of in limbo, and they some of them are sitting at home watching TV and not really going forward with their lives.
I think it's safe to say, and Michael might be able to back this up, there are thousands of such young people in their 20s, maybe into their early 30s, who basically don't have much to do. And yet they have so much to offer. They have so much still to learn in their lives. They have unique gifts, as I think I said before. And so I just came to see, as did others on our board and teachers and whatnot, that we can provide a whole panoply of possibilities for them that can bring out unique aspects of their personality. We have one young woman who's in our Urban Explorers program who does amazing art, but that's because we got into having a couple of artists come in and do masks with them and do different collages. She did a self-portrait that's stunning, that's I think up on our website someplace. And let me mention before I forget, if you don't mind, our website is www.naturelinks.net. And our phone number for Nature Links is 786-505-7657 for anybody who's interested.
And if someone calls or writes you at that website, what are they told? And what's the most common experience that you, common symptoms and the type of people that you experience?
Good question. We basically are looking for students, who, I guess to put a label on it, and we're a society of labels, unfortunately, are mid to higher functioning. So that we are looking for students who are potentially trainable. And yet they might, they're certainly, as Robin mentioned, not ready to go out
and
in the
may
workforce
have finished
now.
High school?
Yes. By and large, they're 18 or 22 because some leave at 18. You're automatically exited from the high school system at age 22. So basically, public school assistance, financial assistance is done at age 22 with the exception of at least one other program. But we just came to see that the society is not really addressing the needs of this population. There are several programs, mention them very quickly, and Robin can get into more detail here, called Vocational Rehabilitation, VR, that in fact trains a number of these students, but they're highly focused training. And a lot of the students that go into these programs often fail because they don't get this kind of mid-level training that they need for social skills, for other things. And that's really what Nature Links is trying to address. We call it job readiness. And it's something that's not part of the state system at this point, by and large. There's very little training to really get involved in highly focused job training. Is that, Robin, is there something you can add?
Well, actually, Robin, I see that the same skill, you want these individuals to have the same skills as others, but different learning methods. What are those methods?
That's interesting. And it
varies to individual, varies, obviously.
Absolutely varies individual to individual. And to Greg's point, post-secondary education, to not get into serious technical stuff, but post-secondary education and vocational rehabilitation are really geared for standard job training and job placement. And not everybody fits into that specific required model when they get out of high school, regardless of what age they are when they get out. So what NatureLinks does is allow that extra time and that extra experience in life, which frankly often helps either directly or indirectly with transitioning into some more formal things if that's what is appropriate for the person. In terms of once somebody transitions, there are some opportunities to take standard training programs and adapt them and basically do the instruction differently that can be more inclusive of individuals with disabilities, and the school system does do that. However, the number of people who need that little in between, like NatureLinks offers, is significant. And there's a fairly limited number of those programs and significant limited access to them.
So
that's the whole point. There's lots of folks who need these kinds of services, and our community needs to be aware of it on a community level, a public level, as well as a funding level, because funding is set up not to necessarily include that kind of a process. It's set up for daycare type facilities, and it's set up for post-secondary. So for all of those people in between, they find it hard to find the programs, and they additionally find it hard to access the any kind of funding for them.
We're speaking about NatureLinks for lifelong learning on today's Topical Currents with Dr. Gregory Bush and Michael Alessandri and Robin Mattiso. We're going to take a short break and be back with more. It's 1:21. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you on this Thursday afternoon. We resume our conversation about NatureLinks for lifelong learning with Dr. Gregory Bush and also the associate director of UM's Nova Southeastern Center for Autism and Related Disabilities, Michael Alessandri, and workforce disability specialist and counselor Robin Mattiso. Mr. Alessandri, tell us more about the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities and your views about NatureLinks.
Well, I'd like to maybe step back just a bit and frame this a little bit more for everyone listening. That, you know, there is a tremendous opportunity I think we have here to create a better life for people with disabilities. Right now, depending on which study you read, 80 to 90% of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities are unemployed or underemployed. And these are people with tremendous gifts, tremendous assets, and within a business community could be used to serve a competitive advantage. The actual disability or the unique abilities, as we now like to frame it, actually could create opportunities for businesses to create.
What's the biggest obstacle?
The biggest obstacle, I think there are limited programs like Greg's that serve as the transition from school to work. Programs that could work on what we call the soft skills, understanding how to interact with peers in the workplace, understanding how to show up for a job on time, how to write a resume, how to interview, how to communicate and socialize with the broader world. So we need those step those transition programs that step up into employment. We also, and I think this is a very important thing, we can't count on the disability community to create all of these opportunities for the sheer numbers of adults that are coming our way. One in every 42 boys has autism. That's a huge increase over the last 20 years. But we need support from the business community, from the chambers of commerce. We need business. We need enterprise. We need those folks from those communities to step up and create opportunities for all of these young adults with these remarkable abilities.
How does income level and perhaps ethnicity figure into all of this?
I think those are great points. I'll defer to Greg in a bit, but I do think what we see, particularly in my community, the autism community, the access to services is much lower, much limited for people who don't speak English as a primary language, who are minority status, who are lower socioeconomic status. They're diagnosed later, and they don't get the highest quality care. So there's a tremendous disconnect between what we know works and their ability to access those services. And then there are issues of people not qualifying for certain services who, in most of those cases, they're the people who fall in the middle. They make enough money to not qualify, but don't make enough money to provide their children with the high quality care that they need.
Robin Mattiso, tell us about some success stories as part of NatureLinks.
Well, having spent time literally in an office next to NatureLinks in the school system, I was seriously impressed with the amount of social skills gained, the amount of independent skills gained, as well as those soft skills that Dr. Alexandri was talking about, all frankly within the framework of art and more leisure activities. So that's one of the unique gifts that NatureLinks specifically offers.
I'd really like to hear more about maybe a specific student, if you could tell his or her story anonymously, of course, and how they were helped.
Sure. There were, at the beginning of NatureLinks, multiple students who had significant barriers to work wasn't even an issue. Getting there, being able to interact with people, organizing themselves just in the NatureLinks activities. Upon first look, one might think this is so not going to be successful and it's going to be a NatureLinks nightmare. But with persistence and working with folks like that, over time, they not only were able to get there on time, participate with NatureLinks, they actually grew in terms of independence in the community. They started to do things like take the bus 2 days a week as opposed to be depending on parents. And their perspective in life changed from a K-12 kind of student who comes to school to somebody that has more control over their life and wants to be out in the community more and started to participate in and think more about the program that was next door, which was a post-secondary culinary program. So just creating a place where you can have that shift take place for an adult outside of the school system is absolutely invaluable.
If I can jump in quickly, Joe, one thing that I think is really important is to understand why nature is at the center of this, because so many younger people these days are cut off from the natural world. They're watching TV, they're in the internet, things like that. We build on some of those skills because we teach videography, for example. But there's a guy by the name of Theodore Louve who's written a book called Last Child in the Woods about the nature deficit disorder in young people. And it's huge. A lot are afraid to go out in the forest. Many don't know how to, you know, anything about gardening or anything else. So we try to build on the whole natural cycle of the world and bring them back into cooking and gardening and learning about the weather.
And how is that done as far as bringing them back to nature?
We have gardens that we've had in several different locations. We have been somewhat nomads. We're at the Frost Museum now. We were out in Virginia Key Beach. We've been at Pinecrest Gardens, different places, all donated to us, by the way, because we don't have the money, frankly, to hire a spot. And so we have them learn about gardening and then cooking. Some of the things that we've grown in our garden, we cook. We have presentations, people coming in. The planner, Victor Dover, has come in to talk about streetscapes to us. We've had renowned photographer of the Everglades, Carmen Ferreira, come in and do a presentation on the Everglades, and then we take them on a trip to the Everglades, have them take photographs and video and whatnot. So we try to see this kind of bigger cycle of the natural world.
Well, you mentioned money. Tell us more about the funding and also the legislative agenda that the Nature Links has.
Okay. We get some funding from the city of Miami, which we're very appreciative of, about $7,500 cash, and then they pay for a part-time assistant for us. We have had some foundations give us money, including Card Center has given some money in the past, which we're very appreciative, and some individual donors. But we're looking to the state legislature to give us some money for this population. So we have a request in to help pay for scholarships for low-income folks, an outreach specialist so that we can have an individual going into underserved communities and finding a lot of these individuals, and because a lot of them are lost, as far as I'm concerned, and that's critically important. So we're looking for about $350,000. We don't have an executive director, for example. We just now have hired a program coordinator, so we don't have an office. We've been out of my house, to be honest. So we've kind of scratched by administratively up to now, and I think we've proven that it works. And so we're looking for more resources from the state and trying to get into the state system and federal system through grants and things like that.
It might be a tough ride through the legislature.
Well, we're very well aware of that. Very difficult.
Greg Bush, tell us more about the story of Paula Bush. How is she? What is she doing?
Paula Bush is doing great. She is in both programs. She went through the baking program at J.R.E. Lee before.
Now how does that work, Robin, the baking program?
The baking program is...
It's for commercial bakery work?
Yes. It's basically designed like we... on the basis of what we just spoke about earlier. It is a specially designed work training program for adults with disabilities who have aged out or graduated out of the school system. You learn the same skills so that you can go out and work in a standard environment, but you learn them differently from the standard programs. And really what that means is that it's tailored to you, and it includes the soft skills and all those things that Dr. Alexandri was talking about. And the end result is an ability to work that you would have gained, but not necessarily through the regular programs that exist in Miami-Dade County Public Schools.
Greg Bush, back to Paula.
Paula? Well, she's in both
programs. We had her at the baking program, and now...
She went through the baking program, and she's actually now in the Urban Explorers program, which is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10 to 3, and also the Culinary Foundations program.
What do the Urban Explorers explore?
They take the metro rail and go downtown. They go to the Perez Art Museum. They've been to the History Museum. They explore the Miami River. They do all sorts of things.
So it's learning being more proficient at getting around using public transportation.
But they're also taking video and photographs of that, and we want to start producing video with STS Special Transportation. So she's gaining from a lot of this, and I'm real pleased at her progress.
Well, once again, the contacts for Nature Links, it's www.naturelinks.net, and also by telephone, area code 786-505-4657. And we want to thank Nature Links founder, University of Miami professor Dr. Gregory Bush, and also Dr. Michael Alessandri. He's the chairman of the Department of Psychology at UM and the director of UM's Nova Southeastern's Center for Autism and Related Disabilities. And a big thanks to Workforce Disability Specialist and Counselor Robin Mattiso. Thank you all, and best of luck to your endeavors.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Food and Dining up next. And we're back with today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper with you. Solo today, Bonnie Berman returns Monday, but this year's colossal South Beach Food and Wine Festival starts in a week. Of course, it's one of the country's largest culinary events. So chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer has tracked each and every one of the festivals, so today is no exception. Linda is set to focus on the wildly popular Burger Bash, and we have an entry or two with us now.
We sure do.
Right beside me, yes. Including, are those sweet potato tots or just?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw you looking at those. Yeah, Joe, burgers are really big. I mean, literally, as you mentioned, the Burger Bash is really, really a popular attraction at the South Beach Wine and Food Festival. But also, burgers are big. On my Facebook page, you can see they're like a mile high picture of these burgers. So I thought we'd have our own competition right here. We're going to have our own Burger Bash here. And with us is Adrian Sanchez. He's the managing partner of the Pincho Factory. Now, the Pincho Factory won the People's Choice Award at the Burger Bash last year. So welcome, Adrian Sanchez.
Hi, Linda. Thank you for having me.
Great. Oh, we're delighted you're here. We filled the studio with burgers. And also with us is Cesar Zapata. He's the chef owner of The Federal in Miami. And he's entering the Burger Bash. I think it's for the first time this year, isn't it, Cesar?
Yes, first time.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for your burger here.
Now, this is
thank
a big you. Deal. You have to make burgers for a lot of people to taste.
Around 2,000 people. That's or probably more.
That's 2,000 burgers.
Now, are these always beef burgers, or they can be lamb? Or
I think for the most part, beef.
Is the beef given to you by a certain... or
Yeah, Schweid & Sons is one of the main sponsors and providers of for the Amstel Light Burger Bash, and they do provide the beef for everyone if you'd like. Otherwise, you can use your own.
Oh, so you, either way?
Right. Yes.
And what do you do?
Well, Schweid & Sons is actually our provider in the restaurant, so we typically get it from
them. They're good to go with it. Okay, so we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions about the Burger Bash or maybe on how to make a great burger? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And email radio@WLRN.org.
Okay. And Fred Tasker, of course, is with us, our favorite wine guy. He's joining us by Skype. You can read Fred's wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column in the Miami Herald, and also his wine column in the Saturday Miami Herald. So, Fred, what are we going to drink today?
Well, I'm going to try to match wine with Sobe burgers, and it may not be as easy as you might think.
Well, I don't know if these guys have wine with their burgers, but we'll find out.
I'll bet they do.
Okay.
Well, it is the Amstel Light sponsor, so.
Well, we won't go there. Okay. Okay, so for Adrian Sanchez, first of all, congratulations on winning the People's Choice last year.
Thank you so much.
What was the winning burger?
Our winning burger was our croquetesa. We basically took our burger and made it Miami style, turned it into a croquette, and topped it off with jack cheese,
so
pickles.
So it was a ground beef croquette.
Yes.
Deep fried. And then what did you have on top of it?
Pickles, jack cheese, mustard and mayo. And it came in a brioche bun.
So what are you making this year?
That I cannot divulge, but it will
just
be great.
Just give us a little hint.
It will have a Miami twist on it, and we'll have probably some guava mixed in there somehow, some way.
All right. Are you listening to this, Cesar?
I am.
Yeah, guava. Okay.
I'm taking notes right now.
Well, congratulations to you, Cesar Zapata. You won Bravo Network's Best New Restaurant at one time, yes?
Thank you. Not too long ago.
So this is your first year entering?
First year for Burger Bash. But uh-huh. It's like my fourth year for Food and Wine Festival.
Okay. So do you have any questions to ask the master over here, Adrian?
Well, how did you end up cooking those 2,000 croquetazos?
I can't even tell you. Just have fun, man. It's fast paced and just really have fun with the staff and everybody. Smile a lot at the crowd. And
I've got a question for Chef Cesar. Where do you stand on burger thickness?
It cannot be too thick.
If it's too thick, it doesn't. It's too done on the outside. And not
right. Right. So then you won't be able to cook it at the right temperature. It will just not be even.
So how rare can you cook it and still be safe?
Well, you can still eat a burger rare. You know, you want it to be around internal temperature, around 120, 125 Fahrenheit. And that's pretty much safe. But
just like a steak, then.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure also you have a good quality meat. So, you know, that's very important.
Okay. So let me, let's go. Well, we mentioned all, let's go to the burgers, what I was going to say, because we've got so many here. Cesar Zapata, tell us about your burger there. And it's huge. I put a picture of it on Instagram.
Right, so this is one of the burgers that
something
we're going to be
crunchy
doing.
Crunchy in the middle of it.
We're going to be doing for Burger Bash. I'm not going to say too much, but it has a plantain relish. It has queso frito and a little chipotle cream.
Mm-hmm. Whoa, okay. So, Joe, you're going to be the, you know, the...
Oniony, yeah.
The judge here. So that looks pretty good, doesn't it? No, but the oniony, it's got like fried scallions?
Crispy shallots.
Shallots. Oh, shallots on
yes.
it. Mm. Mm. All right. So turn the other direction here, Joe Cooper, okay. And you've got three burgers in front of you.
I don't think that's fair for me.
No, he's going to just choose one.
This one is this ambitious. A tostone?
That is a tostone burger.
There
yes.
we go.
So wait a minute. So it's not. Actually, there's no meat there.
There is. What it is
the bun is
the tostones or the buns exactly.
Oh, okay.
We competed with that 2 years ago at the South Beach Wine and Food Festival Burger Bash.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
okay.
It's lettuce, very tomatoes and cilantro mayo.
Yeah, very cubanismo. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then there's two other burgers here. What are they?
The other two burgers are our classic pincho burger. Huh? American cheese, lettuce, tomatoes, onions, some potato sticks and pink sauce. And
what kind of sauce?
Pink sauce. It's our secret pink sauce. Like,
well, what's in it?
Ketchup and mayo and some other secret ingredients.
he's not forthcoming today. Did you notice that? Okay. Now, you have to put that down. There's another burger to taste, Joe Cooper.
And then the third burger I brought is our Perfecto burger.
Perfecto.
Yeah, it has a nice little sweet and savory aspect to it with some caramelized onions, cilantro mayo, and potato sticks.
I can't pick a winner here.
I'm just going to say that. It seems to me that they're all winners. Is that mm-hmm. right?
And creative.
Yeah. So, but the regular, your regular pincho burger is like a regular burger in a sense, except you put your secret pink sauce with the mayo and the ketchup and the secret.
Correct. They're all the same patty. It's just everything's they're all topped up differently.
Oh, it's the different toppings.
Yeah, the meat is always the same.
And say, so for yours... so you don't want to tell us all of it, but there's something crunchy in the center there.
Yeah, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
That's a secret?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry,
well,
Joe.
I'm going to get to the end of the secret.
Yeah, you have to guess what it is. Yes? Mm, good. I happen to know what it is. While you're thinking about it, let's go to Andres.
Is it pork related?
It's no, it's not pork. It's not a meat product.
Oh.
Let's go to line... line two, while you're deciding, yes. While you're chewing, chew away there. Andres, is it Andres?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon to everyone. I just wanted to ask Mr. Zapata?
Yes.
No, Sanchez, excuse me. Zapata is the chef, but Mr. Sanchez is the owner
Managing
of the Pincho Factory?
Yes, one of them.
Okay, great. I noticed that there's a lot of Caribbean influences with the plantain and the fried cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like these have fared better in the Miami market and as opposed to other markets? Like, have those flavors, Latin American flavors, been like introduced to
okay,
other
so
markets
I think
with success?
What you're trying to say, we don't have we only have a couple of minutes here though, so Andres, I just want to say, what you're trying to say is they're putting Latin flavors in because of the market here? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
If it's been successful elsewhere.
Well, we actually have 10 restaurants that are in the pipeline for this coming year and the beginning of next. I think the Latin flavor is something that can be enjoyed by just about everybody.
In what geographical areas?
It could be pretty much anywhere.
I mean your restaurants.
Oh, South Florida primarily. So we have Miami-Dade and Broward, and we have another location coming up in Orlando as well.
So most of Florida. But, you know, to answer Andre's question, is they have Latin flavors, Latin restaurants in New York City. I mean, all over the United States I've seen. In Colorado I've seen them. So these flavors are becoming popular.
Without a doubt.
Right. And Peruvian flavors are becoming outrageously popular.
we have a Cuban/Asian restaurant up here in northern Michigan. Very popular.
Cuban/Asian in the same place?
Uh-huh. Good stuff.
All right. sounds good. So let me ask you then, if you're going to be making your burger, what's the best way to cook one? A grill, saute pan, deep frying that Adrian likes? Cesar, what's your best way?
I go old school, a flat top or a cast iron.
So if you're at home, mm-hmm. a skillet.
Yes.
Right. And just, you know, sear it, and mm-hmm. then lower the heat and let it cook through.
Right, and just a little bit of salt, and that's it.
Okay.
So you let the meat shine.
So that, and that goes with your having the best kind of meat. Just quickly, what's yours?
My home burger will be backyard barbecue charcoal.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well.
With tomato.
Okay. Well, on that note, we're going to take a little break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guests today are Pincho Factory's Adrian Sanchez and the Federal's Cesar Zapata. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. And our guests today are Pincho Factory's managing partner, Adrian Sanchez, and the Federal's chef owner, Cesar Zapata. These are both restaurants here in South Florida. And they've been giving us tips on making great burgers and what they'll be serving at the South Beach Wine and Food Festival Burger Bash. Except Adrian hasn't given me the whole story here. He's just got a big smile on his face. And we wish you both luck. We had a contest here, Joe. You thought they all won.
Well, yeah, they are all really good. I like the combination of tostones with mayonnaise and tomato.
All right. Okay. All right. It's dinner in minutes time. And so here's a quick dinner for a busy night. Excuse me. It's Julia Child's tuna casserole. Now, it was hard for me to believe that Julia Child actually made food with canned food. And so she used canned tuna, and she placed this drained and canned tuna in a bowl, and you flake it with a fork. And then she used regular mushroom soup. To make it a little bit more modern, I've used a low-sodium mushroom soup that you can find in the supermarket, a little shredded cheese, some diced onion. And then you microwave some brown rice. Put it in the bottom of a casserole dish. And then you put the tuna mixture on top, and then a little bit more rice, so you make a layer of it. And then sprinkle some more soup and some cheese on top of that, and put it in a 375-degree oven for 20 minutes. It's as simple as that. And that complete recipe and the photograph, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. And by the way, the photo of the burger, that's at Facebook, Linda Gassenheimer's Facebook. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, as I said, wine with Sobe burgers is a little bit daunting for a wine lover. I'm only being asked to create a perfect wine match for the quintessential American eat-with-your-hands gourmet traditional patriotic red, white, and blue sandwich called the hamburger. Now, if it was just a hamburger, just ground beef on a bun, it would be easy. Any soft, fruity, not too tannic red wine would do, but one good all-around match would be the wine that was the first starter wine for a lot of my generation, good old Gallo Hardy Burgundy at $4 a bottle.
Is it still for sale?
Oh, yeah. That's the current price. You can get it now.
Okay.
$6.99 for a Magnum. It's pretty cheap, and it's not bad.
Okay.
But at the Sobe Burger Bash, they are not your grandfather's burgers. These are big, brash, complex, spicy, juicy, fat, cheesy, spicy. Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
Creamy, challenging, and intimidating to match with wine. To demonstrate, let me just name a few burgers that have scored in past Burger Bashes and my attempts at wine matches for them. First comes the Fat Elvis Burger with thick-cut pepper smoked bacon, peanut butter, and strawberry jam.
Yuck.
match that with a wine or a beer, but I would say maybe a sweetly fruity Pinot Noir, and maybe even the one made by Miomi Wines, which is part of the Burger Bash. Now, next is a past winner, the Luther Burger, with donuts replacing the buns, created when singer Luther Vandross ran out of burger buns.
All right, so, Fred, everyone here is shaking their head.
They wouldn't do well. You use the plantain, you know, and the tostone is the same thing. The extra sugar glaze sweetness calls for a softer, sweet red wine, maybe an extra ripe and fruity Australian Shiraz. And then finally, the burger that I think was inspired by a teenage zombie slasher horror movie. This is a burger called Sympathy for the Devil, and it has jalapenos, buffalo chili sauce, and scorching habanero sauce.
Wow.
Now, this needs a wine with some sweetness to go with all that heat, so I might pair it with a powerful, full-bodied, sweet red wine like port. Or I might just throw up my hands and pour an ice-cold version of the beverage from the Burger Bash's sponsor, an icy, icy, sweet, no, not sweet, icy, icy, cold wine called Amstel Light.
So tell me, Cesar or Adrian, what's popular drink in your restaurants, wine or beer?
More popular is beer. We offer both wine and beer, but I would say beer, usually with a burger, like a dark beer, pairs really well.
And Cesar?
We have both also, but wine. We sell a lot of wine.
So there you go. One wine, one beer? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a emailer here, Kathleen Coral Gables. What wine with burgers? Champagne, of course. Brut bubbly goes with everything. You can't go wrong with champagne or cava, prosecco, yada, 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 yada.
I agree.
See, now I was trying not to say that.
So, Fred, you've got a friend here.
Yeah, I do.
You've got an emailer and say, well done.
We'll compare notes.
Okay. Very good. Well, what are some unusual toppings that you've put on burgers? Adrian?
I mean, we're kind of known for our unusual toppings, I guess, like the fried cheese, eggs.
Eggs?
Eggs. Eggs on a burger are amazing.
Fried eggs?
Fried eggs. Fried eggs on anything is good.
Okay. I have to say to people, because it's not television, that as he's talking about it, he's got the biggest smile on his face, like he's tasting it as he's talking. Say, Sam, how about you?
So once in a while in the restaurant, I'll do a burger night, and I believe maybe last year we did a burger which was called a fat burger. It was basically the burger meat, a piece of foie gras, some truffles,
a fried egg,
avocado, and bacon.
All of that in one?
In one burger, yes.
Sounds like a $35 burger.
I think we were charging around $25. But yes,
with the foie gras and the avocado and the cheese?
Yes. It was a heart attack, but it did very well.
You didn't charge
You know, when I'm grilling, I like to put on about a half-inch thick slice of Vidalia onion and grill that and put that on top of the burger.
Mm, sounds good. And by the way, the Pinchot Factory, as you mentioned, Adrian, you have several locations. So to find out where to go, that's nearest you, you go to where?
Go online, www.pinchotfactory.com.
Very simple for all the different locations. And,
yes.
And your future ones.
Correct.
Okay. And Cesar, where's the Federal located?
51st and Biscayne.
Okay.
Right here in Miami.
Right here. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the buns, because we've heard about the donuts and we've heard about the tostones, but you made one on a brioche. And so what other kind of buns do you use?
I like a potato bun.
What is that?
Potato bread, uh-huh. Like a Martin's.
They're real squishy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I grew up eating a burger, so it's like very comforting. So I enjoy burgers in a potato bun.
Have you ever tried an English muffin?
That too. I heard about that, and I heard it's delicious.
And yeah, it holds up to the burger. It doesn't fall apart the way a lot of buns do.
And at the restaurant for brunch, we also use a biscuit once in a while. So that's also...
You're well known for your biscuits.
For biscuits,
correct. Yes, you've won awards on your biscuits. Yes. How do you get a biscuit? That's a southern dish.
Yes.
Not quite your background. Where are you from?
Well, actually, I was born in Colombia. I grew up in New Jersey, but I also lived in Texas. So I think that's where the whole biscuit
thing
comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah. So developed a great recipe. Took us like almost 2 years to perfect it. And
you've won awards for your biscuits.
Yes.
Yes.
Food and Wine Magazine and some other publications.
Okay. And now, Pincho Factory, what does Pincho stand for?
Well, Pincho is a kebab or a skewer. Uh-huh. So it's pretty much the basic thing is meat on a stick.
So that's what some of your, what are your popular foods that you serve there?
Correct. That's like the other half of the menu. We do skewers, chicken, steak, shrimp. We make them into salads, rice bowls, pita wraps.
Did we mention the tater tots that are sweet potatoes?
No.
Because I can't stop eating them.
I know, because we can't mention because you're eating them. These are sweet potato tots, and then there's a sauce with them. What's the sauce?
That's the apple butter sauce. So it's like, it's the way, the only way I can describe it is like Thanksgiving in a cup.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say it is. Well, this has really been a very delicious thing. If there are still tickets, I think, available for the Burger Bash. If you go to Sobe Wine and Food Festival online, you can find out if they are available, and you can enjoy some of these burgers that these people are going to be making, the secret ones. Okay. Really tasty week.
Mm-hmm.
Cesar Zapata from the Federal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And your delicious burger. And I'm wishing you good luck.
Thank you,
for
Linda.
The Burger Bash. I think people should go and vote for you.
Thank you.
But I don't want Adrian to feel left out. Adrian Sanchez from the Pincho Factory. Thank you for joining us and your great burgers.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Good luck to you. And I hope you win something there, too.
So do I. We'll be defending it.
Okay. You'll be defending your place. Joe Cooper, you ate really well today.
I did really well today.
Yeah. Very happy, huh? Well, next week, we're going to be talking with celebrity chef Jeffrey Zakarian. He has a huge history of food in Miami and everywhere else. So I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then. Oh, and Fred Tasker, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
And that wraps us up this afternoon. Our lead producer, Richard Ives. Associate producer, Polly Landis. And as usual, technical direction by online producer, Paul Leary. Also, as usual, we have free audio archives for download at our website. That's WLRN.org. Link to radio, then Topical Currents. We also have more links, photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Drop us a like if you will. And tomorrow it's the Absorbing Science Friday program with Ira Flato. Monday, Bonnie and I have a fascinating interview with journalist James Walsh. He's written a book about underground efforts to unionize service workers, especially among South Florida gambling operations. James Walsh's book is called Playing Against the House. Again, that's at 1 o'clock Monday. Joseph Cooper, Linda Gassenheimer, Fred Tasker, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.